Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good middle of the night, and welcome back to Cases of Color. I hope you all are doing absolutely wonderful, happy, splendid, amazing, fantabulous, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I hope that that is the mood you are carrying on into this good day, you guys. So a couple of things. Number one, I am your host, Randy. If you have never been here before, thank you so much for listening. I realize that I never state who I am sometimes. Sometimes I forget. So I might need to start doing that so you know who the hell's talking to you. But yeah, it's me, your girl, Randy, back again with another true crime podcast for Cases of Color. And before we even get too far into this thing, if you are not following me on Instagram or Twitter, what are you doing? It's at Cases of Color on both platforms. You definitely need to be following. Trust me, you're going to get a lot of really, really good content. I definitely ask a lot of viewer questions and answers, things that they want to hear from me, things that they are interested in. I definitely make sure that I include my listeners in my decisions. And they're actually the reason that y'all are about to get a little life update before we get into this episode. So I'm really excited to share that with you guys. And for those of you that voted, we don't care. Y'all rude, and that's that on that. Anyways, moving on. So, little bit of a life update. So, since June, I actually was in a paralegal technical training. I'm in the military, and I got an opportunity to do a job that aligns with the law and upholding good order and discipline, which is something that I am interested in. I just wanted to do it in a different capacity, and now that is exactly what I am doing. I successfully passed the course. The course was 66 training days. So from June to September 25th, I was at technical training and I passed though. I did wonderful. Now I'm working my job and me and my family are actually about to move to a totally different state. We're moving further back down south from where we currently live now. And I'm really excited just for the change and to see something new and to do something different and expand myself in my career. I made rank. I also dealt with some low-grade depression while I was gone. Culmination of being with family, being away from family, being an adult, and dealing with different things in my personal life. Just kind of, you know, sent me into a not so positive place. And I talked about that on the last episode. But I'm doing all right now. Definitely taking care of myself during this time. And I'm back with my children. I'm back with my husband. So I'm just getting back into the groove of things and getting back to my life, but also diligently focusing on creating a newer version of my life. One that definitely makes me happy and definitely makes me feel good about myself. And I'm getting close to that. So I'm really happy, really, really happy about that. And I'm in a good mental space and also really focusing on the podcast. You know, I am the only person that does this podcast, but nevertheless, this is important work. And you guys remind me of that all the time, from the listens that I get to the comments that I get to the things that you say. I'm just forever grateful for you guys. But it also reminds me I need to stay up on my shit. I have so many case suggestions that I need to dive into. I have more than enough content to give. So that's exactly what I'm going to do. And I'm really happy about being focused on this podcast and how important it is. And I just wanted to let you guys know that I am doing okay. I'm doing all right. And there are some big, happy changes coming for me and my family. The first week of November, there will not be an episode because I will be in transition and I will possibly not have internet. So in order to not get anybody's hopes up, there will be no podcasts at that time. However, comma, there will be a podcast for the remainder of the month of October, all the rest of the Sundays. So I can't wait for you guys to get them. And November 1st, which is a Sunday. Yeah, that there will be a podcast on that day. But for the remaining, that next week, there will not be a podcast episode because I got to get my internet sorted out. I'm going to be having all my stuff arrive at my house. It's just going to be a time. And if you've ever moved and unpacked and resettled things, you already know why y'all not going to get a podcast during that time, okay? But it's all love, and I hope you enjoy the ones that you do get. And I will make an effort to maybe do a live stream during that time. It might not be podcast related. It might just be more like some news updates to some cases that I've covered, different things like that. So if you guys are interested in that, let me know on Twitter or Instagram. I'll probably put up a poll sometime after the episode comes out so that people will have a chance to vote. So again, if you aren't following me at Cases of Color on Twitter and Instagram, what are you doing? Because you need to do that. Now, let's get into the episode. This episode is really special to me. As somebody who is entering into the legal career field, I wanted to make today's episode about somebody involved in the legal field. And before I get into talking about exactly who that person is, I want to dedicate this episode to my dad. I love my dad. He is an amazing person. When I was leaving technical training, we had to do like a 20-something hour drive back to get back to my home. And my dad came with me and we spent a lot of quality time and we got to have some of the best conversations, some of the best laughs, and it was just a wonderful time. But one of the things that he brought up while we were on the road was this case, and he was driving, so I had the chance to Google and I read a little bit about the case and I just saved it in my browser, and I've been back for a little bit. I haven't done anything with it since, but I took the time to look into the case more and I was like, wow, my dad really gave me a gem. So I researched the case further and this episode is brought to you thanks to my dad, because he put me on to a case that I probably never would have heard about otherwise. So shout out to you, Dad. I love you very much and thank you so much for this case. Today's case is the case of Alberta Jones. If you are sitting here and you're like, who is that? Well, I'm going to tell you. Alberta Jones was born in November 12, 1930 in Louisville, Kentucky. She was a remarkable woman and she attended Louisville Central High School, and then she also went to Louisville Municipal College out there in good old Louisville, Kentucky. She was a Louisville girl through and through, and she went to the Municipal College to pursue her education. This school was an all-black school until it later merged with the University of Louisville during desegregation. Alberta managed to graduate third in her class and transferred to the prestigious HBCU Howard University to get her law degree, where she then graduated fourth in her class. She was also the first black woman to take and pass the state bar exam in Kentucky. And after she graduated, she began practicing law and she took on a pretty important client. Just, you know, the one and only Muhammad Ali. She helped negotiate his first contract. So sis was definitely a big deal. And in February of 1965, one of her greatest accomplishments is she was appointed to the Louisville Domestic Relations Court. And it was there that she filled the role as a prosecutor. She was the first black woman prosecutor in the state of Kentucky. On top of being an amazing prosecutor, she was also a dedicated activist. She was an active member of the NAACP. She participated with the Louisville chapter of the Urban League, and so much more. And since we are in election season, I must mention how she purchased voting machines and took the time to educate black people on how to use the machines so that they could vote. She was very against voter suppression, something that is not a new issue. It has always been an issue for black people and people of color in this country. Literally, black people were getting lynched for voting or encouraging other people to vote. So her putting in that work back then to ensure that black people had equal access to voting and the ability to vote is amazing. She also was big in the community. She helped a young man who lost both of his arms in a very tragic train accident get two prosthetic arms so that he would be able to function in society like a normal person. So what happened to Alberta? Well, honestly, no one really knows. And that's the crazy part. We know that Alberta was murdered, but we don't really know what happened. On the night of her murder, Alberta Jones was at home with her mother and sister who she lived with. She was up with her family reading about the assassination of President Kennedy. She was just genuinely intrigued by what happened to President Kennedy. And around 10 p.m., her younger sister went to bed, and when her younger sister woke up the next morning, Alberta was not there. And the sister immediately asked the mother where Alberta was, and her mother said, "I've been laying in bed the whole night wondering that same thing. Jones's mother said that she received a call from a woman named Gladys Wyckoff, and that Gladys asked Alberta to meet with her so that they could meet to talk about some lawsuit that the beautician had and also to try on some wig. And Alberta told her that she didn't handle cases like that anymore. And I guess Gladys had called her uppity, and it really bothered Alberta because she didn't want to come off like that, especially in her community. So she agreed to meet with Gladys for whatever reason. And the last thing that the mother did was she asked Alberta, she said, do you want me to go with you? And Alberta said she would be okay. And that is the last time that anyone saw Alberta alive. The next day, Alberta's mother called Gladys, and Gladys' daughter answered the phone and said that her mother was downtown handling some business. But unlike in today's society, you know, stuff wasn't open 24/7, and stuff didn't always open crack of dawn early either. So after that, they never heard from Gladys again. So that was very suspicious. So on 25 August 1965, a body was found in the Ohio River, and it was the body of Alberta Jones. When her body was found, her death was initially ruled a drowning, but the crazy twist is that the car she was in, it was a rented car, was located several blocks away, and it did have blood inside of it. And an autopsy determined that she received several blows to the head before she was ultimately placed in the water, whether it be thrown in the water, whatever the case may be. But her murder to this day was never solved. And it raises so many questions. You know, why would somebody want to hurt Alberta? And why was this murder of a state prosecutor never solved? So the police department took their time investigating this case. Shocker, shocker, you guys. Such a shocker. So much so that it wasn't until a follow-up investigation that they determined that Alberta had been hit with a brick and beaten unconscious. A witness also told police that they saw three men toss a body over the Sherman-Minton Bridge, where her purse was later found. And when I say her purse was later found, I'm talking about 3 years later. Her purse was just found hanging from the bridge, y'all. Just sitting there, minding its business, hanging from the bridge. And the police did not take the time to look into any of this. There was an overwhelming amount of evidence coupled with multiple witnesses. For years, the police told the family that there was not enough evidence to arrest anyone, and they have stuck with that to this day. So in 2013, a woman named Remington Williams started to look into the case. She herself was a law student, and she had never heard about Alberta Jones, even though she had lived in Kentucky. So she immediately became intrigued in what happened to this prosecutor. And she was told that witnesses were dead and that all the sheriffs that worked on the case were dead. But that's actually not true. She reached out to a Mr. Carl Corder. He was actually a young detective at the time of the murder, but was one of the main detectives at the murder. And he confirmed that there was so much evidence that was collected. He oversaw a lot of the evidence collection. But a huge amount of the evidence that was collected, as far as blood samples, fingerprints, her purse, cigarette butts from the car, her clothes, and her shoes, it's missing. It cannot be found. No one knows where it's at. No one knows where it was put. There is no account of it being moved anywhere. It is simply no longer in weapon storage. Even though the Louisville, Kentucky police claim that they still care about the case and that they are going out of their way to solve this case and figure it out, everything is gone. So how are they going to do that if everything is gone? Some of the evidence that is missing is a fingerprint that was found on the inside of the car that Alberta was driving. It was linked to an unnamed man that was 17 at the time of the murder. And he was described as a bookworm, even described as timid and meek. And someone who knew him personally said that he isn't a killer. That's not the type of person that he is. But he knows who did it. And for somebody to say that about you, I mean, that's a pretty strong thing to say about a person. But this person knew him personally, and that is still their thoughts to this day. But the man claims that he did not kill Jones. He even took a polygraph test, and the polygraph test noted some deception. Now, of course, as we true crime junkies know, it's not admissible in court, but it is still interesting that it noted some deception as far as what's concerned. And the man in question, he didn't live far from where the alleged kidnapping of Alberta Jones happened. And that brings me to a next piece of evidence that can't be found. There are witnesses, plural here, that claim to have seen an abduction of Alberta Jones take place. They willingly gave these statements, but there were no efforts made to verify or look further into these claims at all. A lot of these key witnesses who gave these statements are still alive to this day, and so is the lead detective that helped collect a lot of the evidence for this case. And no one is making efforts to talk to these key witnesses or the lead detectives, and it feels like no one truly wants to solve this case. And you know what? That's the shit I don't like. So now that we've just kind of uncovered that and realized that all of this evidence is suspiciously missing, I think we want to answer a question. I know I do, and I kind of racked my brain about it, is why would anyone want to kill her? I mean, when you hear people describe Alberta, she's described as being kind and sweet, somebody who you want to be around. She was such an all-star activist. She was somebody who, you know, people were genuinely interested in and cared about. So why would anybody want to kill her? Well, there's a couple of reasons that I've deduced. I want to be clear. These are my personal speculations. These are not things that have been found to be true. These are things that I personally, with my own opinion, think in my own mind, and these are my own personal thoughts. I have to say that because, listen, I don't have the coins for people to be suing me, okay? I, through research, found out that Jones worked on a lot of domestic violence cases. Again, she was a prosecutor in the domestic relations court. And, you know, back in the day, men, unfortunately, could get away with so many things, and domestic abuse was one of those things. And she was not afraid to try those cases. And Alberta was actually putting a lot of white men in jail for domestic violence, and they were not happy about that. They did not like it. So is it a possibility that maybe she put a certain man in jail and that was his form of payback? It's a possibility. Or maybe the white community as a whole, because again, this is still during segregation times and civil rights movement. Maybe they didn't like the fact that there was a black woman in court with the power to put away white people of any type. And they wanted to do something about it. Like I said, you guys, they were literally bombing schools, bombing churches, hanging black people for telling other black people to vote. What do you think they would do to a black woman that's a prosecutor in that state during that time? Just think about that for a moment. Additionally, we have to think of another thing. There was one rumor that involved the FOI. That's the Fruit of Islam, if you're unaware. I'm not going to speak on the FOI, and I'm just going to leave it at that. But it was very baseless, and it was just a speculation. I'm not going to say, you know what? I'm just going to leave it alone. Gladys Wyckoff, the woman who called. I did so much digging, and when I tell you, I found nothing. Like, it doesn't even mention them interviewing her, going to talk to her, or anything. And I'm going to say this, you know, if you know anything about, like, the assassination of Fred Hampton, or even, you know, what happened with Malcolm X, the government and other entities have been known to place people who look like you in positions to be near you, close to you, around you, in close proximity for the purpose of hurting you. It's exactly what happened to Fred Hampton. You know, Malcolm X, it was a damn NYPD officer undercover who was his main security personnel, the person he had around his wife and children. I say all that to say, it is not an unrealistic theory to believe that Gladys Wyckoff was used as a pawn to lure Alberta somewhere. From what her family said, Alberta was not the person to be out late at night. That was not a pattern for her. So if somebody's following her, they're tailing her, they would know that. You would need something to get her out of the house at a time where the city is not packed, where it's not all eyes on her. We can get her by herself. And it, in my opinion, it is a possibility that this woman, Gladys Wyckoff, may have played a role in that. And I don't think I would be far off in saying that, because it's just very convenient, the timing. And for somebody to just beat her over the head and toss her into the water like that, I just don't see that as being a crime of incident. Like, oh, this person is here. A crime of opportunity. That's the phrase I'm looking for. I just don't see it being a crime of opportunity, you guys. I don't. And again, if you think something different, let me know on Instagram and Twitter. These are just my two pennies, is what I think. I just don't see this being a crime of opportunity, y'all. It just doesn't make sense. And I think Gladys Wyckoff has more to do with it than we know. And unfortunately, I was looking online and I did see an obituary that had Gladys Wyckoff's name on it, and it was for 2017. I do not know if that's the same Gladys Wyckoff, because of course Kentucky or Louisville Police Department did a shit job in collecting evidence, and you can't even find a damn picture of this witness or confirmation of witnesses or anything like that, because you know the trash. This was the same police department that killed Breonna Taylor, so here we are, full circle moment here. But I say all of this to say, it really pisses me off that a woman so prestigious can be murdered, blatantly murdered, and the evidence to a case that is allegedly still open and they are claiming to still be diligently looking into is just gone without a damn trace. That is some of, I can't even say it's the craziest shit, because am I shocked at this point? No, I'm not. But I am disgusted, and it is sad, and it's disheartening to me. And it's heartbreaking, because just what does this mean for her family? It means that most likely they're going to die without their sister ever getting justice. A prominent activist, public figure, and most importantly, an amazing trailblazing Black woman was murdered, and the Louisville Police Department doesn't give a shit. But I mean, again, this is the same police department who did what they did to Breonna Taylor. So am I shocked? No. And clearly, they haven't really changed too much, because this is clearly how they do business. So this is the story of Alberta Jones, you all. It's heartbreaking. It is still unsolved to this day. There's still no trace of any of the evidence that's been collected. And unfortunately, this is another Black woman who will possibly never get justice in our lifetime. I'm so glad that I could share this story with you. Again, a big thank you to my father one more time for sharing this story with me and putting me on to such a great story about an amazing woman. And I'm so glad that I got to hear about this wonderful woman who trailblazed in the legal field and became a prosecutor, and even in her short life did some absolutely amazing things for her community and as a prosecutor for the state of Kentucky. So shout out to you, Alberta Jones. Rest in peace always. And I'm so glad I got to tell your story. If you are interested, definitely check out the links down below. I definitely have some merch, Case of Color merch. We have hoodies, long sleeve shirts. It is getting cold outside, if it's not already freezing cold. So definitely a nice little piece to walk around and rock or whatever. And then we also have mugs, you know, as coffee drinkers, cocoa drinkers, pumpkin spice drinkers, whatever is your flavor. It definitely would look good in a Case of Color mug. Also, if you have bought merch, please share and tag me so that I can share on my page, because whenever you guys do, I love to see it. Follow Cases of Color at Cases of Color on Twitter and Instagram. If you're not following me, you're making some big mistakes, and I'm gonna need you to follow me to stay updated on what's going on. Also, sometimes I pop onto my stories or lives or whatever and just kind of interact with you guys. Anybody who's DM'd me, you know, I love to respond to DMs. So definitely come and, you know, fuck with the kid on Instagram and Twitter. And lastly, but most certainly not least, I love you guys. I appreciate you guys so much. Thank you for listening. Sharing is caring. So if you want to share an episode with somebody who you care about, I always really greatly appreciate it. We are really growing the platform, you guys. And I'm so grateful for everything that we have been able to do as a Cases of Color community. So on that note, have a good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or good middle of the night.